Welcome to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. As part of expanded coverage by the Environment Report, Stateside will be looking at environmental issues more frequently. And today we're going to talk about diverting water from the Great Lakes. A revised and updated book titled The Great Lakes Water Wars has revealed a large diversion that might have violated agreements between the Great Lakes states and two provinces of Canada along the lakes. Peter Annan is the author of the book, and he joins us now. Hey, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks, Lester.
So let's start with some basics. What kind of agreement or agreements limit water withdrawals from the Great Lakes?
Well, the main one is the Great Lakes Compact, which I like to think of as a legal water fence that surrounds the Great Lakes watershed and is designed to keep Great Lakes water inside the Great Lakes basin. It really was implemented because of a fear that in an era of increasing global and continental water insecurity, that there could be a run on the Great Lakes with long-range, large-scale water diversions.
Now, I want you to define Great Lakes Basin. When you say that, what does that mean?
When you think about the Great Lakes, all of them together, they're surrounded by what I refer to as a soup bowl rim or high ground. And water, rainfall, snowfall, groundwater recharge that occurs within that soup bowl is the secret to water sustainability in the Great Lakes region. And water that falls outside that soup bowl rim flows into the Mississippi River to the west or the Hudson Bay watershed to the north or the Atlantic Ocean watershed to the east.
I recall a couple of years ago there was a lot of discussion about whether the Wisconsin city of Waukesha could withdraw water from Lake Michigan because its water supply was contaminated by radium. It was right on the edge of that basin. How was that handled?
Yeah, and so under the Great Lakes Compact, you know, which is a ban on diversions with limited exceptions, there are two complicated limited exceptions. One is for straddling communities that sit right on top of the edge of the soup bowl rim, and the other one is for straddling counties that have communities that are in a county that straddles the soup bowl rim, but the towns itself in question are outside, clean and clear outside the Great Lakes Basin. And Waukesha was in a straddling county situation under the Great Lakes Compact, and its water diversion proposal required the approval of all 8 Great Lakes governors, not just the local governor of Wisconsin, but all 8 Great Lakes governors from New York to Minnesota. And it was quite a controversial water diversion proposal.
And finally, I think public health won out on that because the people were, they had contaminated water. So that, I'm sure, influenced. But in its bid to win Foxconn Technology Group Factory, Wisconsin again needed water from Lake Michigan. Now, this wasn't for public health reasons. Why was it okay to have that withdrawal?
Foxconn is just as controversial, if not more, in some circles than Waukesha. And Foxconn is an application. The other one that I referred to falls under the straddling community application exception of the Great Lakes Compact. And those applications, because the communities sit half in or part out of the Great Lakes watershed, the compact negotiators decided that only the local governor needed to approve those straddling community applications. They notify the other Great Lakes states and provinces. They can take feedback from them, have feedback from the general public through a public hearing process. But in the end, after all of that, the local governor alone is the one who decides these straddling community water diversion applications. And Wisconsin approved the Foxconn diversion earlier this year, and it's now being litigated.
In your revised book that's just come out, The Great Lakes Water Wars, you reveal the state of Wisconsin okayed another diversion, an even larger one, for a city that had been the source of quite a bit of a negotiation and debate before. Let's talk about Pleasant Prairie and its first request for a water diversion before the Great Lakes Compact was in place. When was that and what happened?
Yeah, in the late 1980s, early 1990s, Pleasant Prairie, again, in that same part of Wisconsin, it has bad groundwater, applied for a water diversion from the Great Lakes because its groundwater was just abysmal. I mean, it looked bad, it smelled bad, and the only thing people mainly use it for was flushing the toilet. This was very early on in the whole water diversion debate in the Great Lakes region, and Pleasant Prairie, after a long, drawn-out struggle was granted a water diversion of 3.2 million gallons per day, again, back in the late 1980s, early 1990s.
And at the time, as your book explains, Governor Blanchard had some serious questions about it, but finally said, okay, fine. It was capped at a certain amount of water per day. But since then, recently, Pleasant Prairie has been given permission by the Wisconsin state government to take a lot more water out of Lake Michigan. On what authority was that granted?
Yeah, and this is the big surprise that came out of the reporting in my book, and it's gotten a lot of attention. And it's just under the Great Lakes Compact, which was adopted in 2008, all the Great Lakes states were required to report to the Great Lakes Governors Association where they have existing diversions prior to the compact and what the level of those diversions are so that they could be grandfathered in at a level that could then be used as a baseline from which future expansions of those water diversions in the future might be measured from. Well, Wisconsin, in the grandfathering Pleasant Prairie, boosted Pleasant Prairie's water diversion from 3.2 million gallons per day to 10.69 million gallons per day based on anticipated future need, and so that the sewer system matched up with the water supply system. That made Pleasant Prairie the largest water diversion in Wisconsin, and nobody knew about it. It wasn't publicly notified. There were no public hearings about it, and that was something that I dug up in the reporting on the book, and it's captivated a lot of attention since the book came out.
You also report in the book that a California water bottling company has set up shop in Pleasant Prairie. Seems like instead of piping Great Lakes water away, are we shipping it out of the basin in bottles now?
Bottled water is an extraordinarily controversial and complicated issue. But there is an irony that this community that got permission for a diversion of Great Lakes water now has a California water bottling company that is using water from that diversion to send bottled water hither and yon. Fascinating juxtaposition of events.
Let's bottom line this, and I don't know if you can answer this question, but was this a violation of law? Was this a violation of the compact?
That's the big debate right now, and I think everyone's kind of still digesting what exactly this means. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is quite confident that it followed the letter of the law and that expanding Pleasant Prairie's water diversion does not violate the language of the compact. That's their position. At least one environmental organization is consulting attorneys. That's the Alliance for the Great Lakes in Chicago. And then in the book, as you know, I quote the former head of the water division at the Wisconsin DNR, who is questioning the legality of the Pleasant Prairie move. But there's another debate here, Lester, too, is that there's the letter of the law and there's the spirit of the law. And the Great Lakes Compact was adopted in an incredibly transparent way. The Waukesha diversion also was processed in a very transparent way. And what's shocking a lot of people is you could have this massive 7 million gallon water diversion for a relatively modestly sized community that became the largest water diversion in Wisconsin, and nobody knew. That's what's catching a lot of people off guard. So maybe it's illegal, maybe it's not. The DNR is quite certain that it's not illegal, but there's a lot of conversations going on about the spirit of the compact and whether this meets the spirit of the compact and what was intended by those compact authors.
What you reported in the book has been picked up by the Milwaukee Sentinel, the Chicago Tribune, now here on Michigan Radio. And I'm wondering, are you starting to get some idea about what the other Great Lakes states are saying about this revelation?
Yes, I am, confidentially. I'm getting a lot of thank yous and no commitment on where they stand on this, but they're very, very grateful to have been alerted to the situation at this point. So again, a lot of people still kind of digesting the news, and there'll be upcoming meetings of the Great Lakes Compact Council and regional body. There'll be one meeting in Indianapolis on October 3rd and another one in Chicago on December 8th, and I would imagine that this topic will come up.
I'm wondering if that first diversion back in the 80s to Pleasant Prairie and the subsequent Wisconsin diversions have kind of opened a Pandora's box of water withdrawals now.
Basically, what we've seen is that for 100 years, the largest and most controversial diversion in the Great Lakes region has been in Chicago, where we have 2.1 billion gallons of Great Lakes water going to the Gulf of Mexico every day, not being returned. And what we've seen in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s is that Wisconsin has sort of been chipping away with a series of small to medium-sized water diversions that don't even come close to Chicago, and that water is being returned to the Great Lakes after use, which is required by the compact, but there are a lot of them. Wisconsin now has more water diversions than all other Great Lakes states combined, and it has become sort of what I call the new front line in the Great Lakes water war. And I don't think it's necessarily a Pandora's box. I mean, these were the things that the compact anticipated. These water diversions don't set precedent for long-range, large-scale diversions. These were all under the exception clause, and all the water needs to be returned to the Great Lakes Basin after it's used. But I think we're going to see more water diversions in southeastern Wisconsin, and what we have, especially in the state of Michigan, is an incredibly engaged public on these water issues. And I think that needs to continue because, you know, in the end, if the population isn't engaged on this, that's when untoward things tend to happen.
Peter Annan is the director of the Northland College Mary Griggs Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation in Wisconsin and the author of the revised and updated book, The Great Lakes Water Wars. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Lester. Thank you.
We reached out to Governor Rick Snyder's office for comment. Tanya Baker, the governor's deputy press secretary, emailed us this statement, quote, "All jurisdictions take compliance with the Great Lakes Compact very seriously. The state is looking back through the record to try to understand the history as well as reviewing the case to see what the impact of the withdrawal is. If an issue is identified, it will be taken up with the Compact Council," end quote. And Michigan's representative on the Great Lakes Compact Council has agreed to join us on Monday. Tune in to Monday's Stateside to hear that interview.